League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Without further ado, I will say a good friend and a friend of the show and a closet Viking fan that's actually a Patriots fan, but a guy we love talking to. Kevin McHale joins us right now from a plush, luxurious hotel in California as he gets ready to do his hobby, calling a game tonight. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm doing the Clippers-Spurs game tonight. Should be fun.
Clippers, Spurs, TNT. If you can't get enough of Kevin McHale on the radio show, then turn the dial to TNT tonight and see the man break it down for you one step at a time. Coach, your family is on my radar, by the way. Depending on what happens Saturday night with Vikings-Packers, I owe Lynn and Tommy a whole heaping if it happens my way.
Well, it'll be a good game. I have a bad feeling about those Vikings. They've started off 5-0, have been falling like a stone since.
Well, I hope they keep falling like a boulder in my mind. But I wanted to get some things. Last week, I wanted to get to this with you. We really never have kicked the tires on this one, but it's something I'd be interested in your perspective on. I've always been irked by everybody anointing Phil Jackson the greatest coach of all time when, in my opinion, in a lot of cases, he just waited for a team to be really good, and then he stepped in right at the right time to take them over the top. Whereas Red Auerbach, who he surpassed, and a guy that you know very well, he built the team, he brought it all together, you know, and then he was able to reap the benefits of what he put together and sowed. I was just kind of curious on your take on all that, because you know Red very well, and you know how it all went down, where now Phil's the winningest coach of all time.
Yeah, no, look, at Red did it through different eras, too, GMing and coaching, and, you know, he won. Red took a team. That was a good team. Then, you know, he made a really, really shrewd move and got Bill Russell in a swap, and, you know, they started winning. And they won through the Russell era, of course. I mean, you know, they won a ton. But then you got to remember, he put together another team, the Dave Collins era, JoJo White. They won the 70s. Then he put together another team, that the Bird team in the 80s, that won again. And so, I mean, he, to me, he is the best manager coach that there was in the NBA. And, you know, he had a great feel for people. He had a great feel for a team and what it took to win. He understood chemistry so well, and he understood how the game, two guys that really have good symmetry and good chemistry, and just how much better they play together. And so he had just a great eye and a great talent of putting together players and letting them play. And, you know, nothing against Phil, but I just think that Red, to me, has always been, you know, the best coach in the league, and I know Phil surpassed him, but I've just been so knowing him and being around him, I just can't say enough good stuff about Red. Just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And, you know, Phil took the Chicago team. I think Doug Collins got him to a certain point, and then, you know, to Phil's credit, you know, they won the three, and then Michael retired, and they came back, and they won again. Then he went out and got with the Shaq group, and Shaq and Kobe, and, you know, they won there, and he came back, and he won again with a different group with Shaq and Pau Gasol. So to say that Phil is not a, you know, Phil won with different groups and, you know, different air in Chicago and in L.A. But there's just something special about it. Not taking anything away from Phil, but there is something special about Red. I think, yeah, just knowing him so well, I put him one notch above.
Kevin McHale joined us on the show. Coach, it was recently announced that McGrady's going to be up for the Hall of Fame. And your thoughts on, is he worthy? Is he Hall of Fame caliber career?
You know, I think Tracy had Hall of Fame talent. I think it'll be interesting to see if he does get in. I mean, there was no doubt that the guy had really unbelievable amount of talent, and you could see that, you know, when he was just a young kid when he got up to Toronto and they drafted him, and just his ability to every aspect of the game. He could score the ball, he could pass the ball, he could rebound it, he could block shots. He was long. You know, I think the one thing that always stands out with Tracy is, you know, did they win enough? Did his teams win enough? Did he push him to? Did he push his team to a point where you said, man, that guy's presence alone on that team pushed it to heights that they wouldn't have got to without him? And so that I think as time goes on, and I think as numbers become such a huge thing in our league, that part of the game gets overlooked a lot. But I think that's a huge part of it. You know, what was your team success? But I think Tracy will end up in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure it'll happen. I mean, it's not like when Akeem Olajuwon is available, the first team, first ballot, no question. I don't know if Tracy is in that category, but from a talent standpoint, he was a phenomenally gifted player.
Coach, we look at the Rockets. We were talking about them. Everybody always wants to get your perspective on them. They hit their first bump in the road. They got their first little bit of adversity, losing Capella for 4 to 6 weeks with the fracture in his leg. You and I talked about needing a low post guy, not only offensively, but especially defensively. A guy like Karl-Anthony Towns gets 40 on them. Is this the first big challenge for this team now coming into this part of the season?
Yeah, there's always a challenge when you lose a player. I think that, Clint does a great job, Capella, of rolling to the hole, collapsing the defense with his ability to catch high and finish. And then he's a good shot blocker, and he's a good rebounder. I think Clint's just going to get better and better. But I see now they're starting Montrezl Harrell in there, who will give him great energy. He doesn't have Capella's length to protect the rim, but he's going to give him great energy. And I think that, Coach D'Antoni, I think they started taking off, the Rockets did, when Decker got in the lineup and Harrell got in the lineup, and they brought a little bit more juice, a little bit more energy to the game. And there are nights they shoot a lot of threes, and they need some of that, just that buzz from young kids. So I think Harrell and Decker gave them a big bump, and I think they'll do okay, but they need Capella back. And right now their big quest is can they surpass the Clippers and just get into that third spot in the Western Conference and just hold on to it. Clippers are going through some adversity of their own with Blake Griffin being out for a while. Can they get a 5-6 game lead over the next 6-8 weeks when Griffin is not playing, for them to hold on to that third spot, because I don't know if they'll have a better record than the Spurs, or of course Golden State I think will have the best record, but they move into that third spot and tighten that down. That gives them a good chance. Now one thing that's funny when you look at the Western Conference and finishing third, fourth, fifth. Boy, you want to stay away from Memphis if they ever do get healthy and stuff. You want to do everything you can to stay away from them in the playoffs because, they've run into some adversity. And Marcus Gasol has got to be, right up there with MVP of the league right now for Memphis. But I would like to see Houston be able to hold that third spot. And, again, I don't know if they can catch. I don't think they'll catch the Spurs. But, that's their big quest now over the next 6-8 weeks. Blake Griffin is out. Can they move up and just solidify that spot?
Coach, we got to take a break real quick, but we want to get back to you. I got more things for you, and I want you to ponder without giving it away. Buddy ball, skinny hips, and a whole lot more. How about that for a tease?
Okay, all right, buddy ball.
Kevin McHale, back in a minute. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, Joel, Barry, Nick behind the glass, and of course, a touch of class, the Hall of Famer Kevin McHale joining us from Los Angeles, where he's calling Clippers-Spurs tonight, so it could be worse. That's a big game. You can catch him on TNT. And, Coach, before the game, before the break, I teased a few things that I would like to get you to speak on, that some of it may or may not be topics we've talked about in the past. First thing is, I want you to break down skinny hips for me. We've talked about it without naming players' names, but when we were sitting on the side, pregame and otherwise, you had a really interesting philosophy. When you see a kid that's maybe very slight coming out of college, and we know these kids come out way too early these days, but you get the kids that come out that maybe have the height, but everybody's hoping they can put on size. Can you tell them how important it is if a kid has, like, skinny hips?
Yeah, you know, you look at some of those kids, they're built, their frames just aren't built to carry weight. I mean, you know, they'll gain some weight, but they're just, you know, their shoulders and their hips, they're just narrow through that area. And they never, ever really, they put on some of the, you know, just your typical getting a little bit older man strength, but they're just not going to be able to carry a lot of weight. And you see some of the guys that come out, and they may be very skinny, but you look at them, they, you know, they got the broad hips, they got some room in there to put some weight on, some shoulders that look like they can, you know, carry some weight. And their frame, they'll fill out, but I look at a lot of these kids coming out, and I just say they're just not going to gain a lot of weight. The, you know, the young kid comes to mind in L.A. right now. I mean, he's just going to stay, he's staying skinny his whole career, I promise you that.
What about Nerlens Noel? Because there's a guy that you talk about that a lot of people have rumored with Clip Capella out.
Yeah, you know what? Another guy, I think, you know, he's had so many injuries and stuff. I don't know, but he's not going to be. But he's never going to be a big, tough, you know, 285-pound guy that's going to throw people around and stuff. He's a talented guy. He's long. He's lean. He's going to, you know, block shots and stuff. But, again, you know, I don't know. I know that, you know, Clint being out, I look at Clint versus those guys, and I think Clint's got a chance, upside defensively and rebounding. I think Capella's a better rebounder than them and probably a better shot blocker.
Coach, I don't know if you keep up with college at all or if you saw what happened with Grayson Allen. But does something like that affect his draft status? I mean, you're a former GM. Do you look at him differently now? And how does that affect him as he comes in the NBA, how other teams and other players look at him?
Yeah, you know, would it affect me? Yeah, I like him. I think I'm great. Guy beat you. I want to kick him in the shin, too. I just didn't. You know, he's a competitive kid. I don't think that'll hurt his draft much. I mean, you do that in the NBA, and someone's going to punch you in the mouth. That's the difference. The college kids, they're not sure, you know, what to do. You do that to an old salty pro, and believe me, he'll get you at some point. He's got to stop that. But he's a competitive kid. I don't think that'll really hurt him. I think he's going to, you know, he's going to have the Dookie stigma, anyways. You know. Spoiled Dookie kid gets beaten, he trips people and stuff like that. But yeah, I like his I like his competitive nature. You know, I look at that kid and I think that he's improved coming into Duke. You know, he was really I'm sure that he in his mind thought he was a one and done or a two and done or whatever. But I think he's definitely an NBA player. You know, how good I don't know, but nah, you know that stuff. I mean, doing that stuff against the opponent is like, you know, Christian Laettner stepped on a guy's chest when he was coming out of Duke, and evidently they got something about feet in Duke. I don't think that really bothers you. I think some of the guys that you're more worried about are the guys that are just getting in trouble and, you know, irritating their teammates and doing stuff like that that are disruptive inside their own team. At least, you know, with him, he's disrupting the other team and taking all of his aggression out on dirty plays on them. I'd much rather see that.
I don't know about you, Coach. I'm still waiting for someone to knock Draymond Green on his ass. But that's another story for another day in terms of kicking. But I do want to bring up another thing that you've had some great stories about. One thing that annoys me is buddy ball in the league, that, you know, you got your buddies on another team, and aside from the hugs and handshakes before the game, during the game, and after the game, there's all kinds of smiles and laughing. And it was different back in your era, I know, but you got a couple stories. One that comes into mind particularly was one I've heard you tell about a guy that was looking to try and, you know, have you help him out, give him to make him look good, and you set him up pretty good back in the day.
Well, that was my old teammate Chris Engler. He was with me in Minnesota for a while. He's from Stillwater, Minnesota. I was from Hibbing, Minnesota. Then he went out to Wyoming. He came in the league. And Chris got in the league, and I was playing against him late in the game, and I was getting ready to come out. We were ahead, and so I told Chris, I said, "Hey, Chris, when you get the ball, just go in and fake left and go in, and I'll give you an easy 2 points, make you look good and stuff like that." So he gets the ball, and he fakes left, goes in there, goes to lay it in, and I throw it in about the 30th row, and I block it. I look at him, I go, "You should know better than to ever trust me. I'm not going to give you nothing." And I said, I just started laughing. And Chris was so dejected, his head went down. And I got the biggest kick. Every time I see him, we still laugh about that. I said, you should have known better than that. It was a no-mercy league. I didn't believe in giving anybody to anything.
And you know it's changed, but I mean, the last guy that I thought really still kind of exemplified that kind of behavior was Kevin Garnett, who you worked with a ton when you drafted him.
Yeah, Kevin didn't want to give anything up. Kevin would block shots. Guys would try to shoot it after the buzzer. He'd wait around. Hell, he'd wait around the whole timeout to make sure they didn't score a basket after the whistle when the timeout came. And yeah, Kevin was a guy that, you know, he didn't care if you liked him or not. And he had that I just don't care tendency ever since he was a young player. And I just think you kind of got that or don't got that. And I look in the league right now, and there's just a lot of guys who just, to me, they play hard, they do stuff, but there's just not an edge to them where it's my team versus your team, it's us versus them, and if you're not us, you are the enemy. And for that 48 minutes, I don't want to be your friend. I don't want you to like me. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to beat you, and that means stretching rules. That means getting you off me. That means a lot of stuff that you've got to do, and I like that. I like players that play with a little bit of an edge to them, and you're seeing less and less of that as these guys in the NBA, as kids, start knowing each other at 12 and 13 and 14 and playing in all these elite things and going to these camps, and they have the whole world or the whole United States has gotten so small when it comes to the top basketball players. They all kind of know each other. And back when we played, you didn't have that A and B. You know, the more familiar with what you were with. Players, it did truly breed contempt. And so, you know, the old thing, familiarity breeds contempt. That was true. The more you played them, the more you saw them, the more you didn't like them.
Yeah.
And you really wanted to take their head off.
I.e. you and Kurt Rambis. The other thing that we were talking about today that I wanted to get your opinion on is I've long been of the believer that kids coming over from Europe are so much more fundamentally sound than kids when they get drafted in the NBA out of the States these days. And I blame a lot on AAU and the fact that the system here is so messed up and skewed that they take a kid from eighth grade on and they say, hey, take the ball. You're going to be the man. Play for my team. Play for my AAU team. Play for my high school. Play for my college. By the time they get to they're drafted and they're in the NBA, they may be able to go one-on-one with the best of them, but they have no idea how to run a system on either end of the floor. They have no idea what action is. They don't know terminology, how to execute. And bottom line is they can't even shoot free throws, whereas these European kids are so well-trained from such a young age that they come in more game-ready to play in terms of a team system. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
I think European guys come in and they're able to make their teammates better, and they've grown up doing that, which is a huge thing. You know, and in the NBA now, you get guys come in that are very, very good individually, but how much do they make their teammates better? The sign, we talked about it with Tracy McGrady earlier in the show. Your whole thing when you get in the NBA, you've got to elevate your teammates' games. You've got to make them better, and they've got to make you better. And once you start getting that, that's why I always call, you know, the chemistry and symmetry of basketball. Once you start getting that, where I make you better and you make me better, and together we step out there, that's when you have something special. All this individual talent that people look at, if it's not making their teammates better, you just are never, ever going to have success. And I look at it, there's a couple ways to make your teammates better. I'm not sure that Michael Jordan ever said, you know, I'm going out every single night to make all these guys better. He went out and just played with the ferocity, and he was so good that the opposing team had to put two players on. He distorted the opposing team, so where his teammates were better just because no one was guarding him. They double teamed. They were always sagging. I was helping off on him, and his fiery competitiveness made his teammates bring a fire out there. Where conversely, Magic went out of his way to like make everybody better. Magic went out there passing the ball, you know, giving up points left and right in a break situation to throw it to other people to get them going. And you know, he went out of his way. You know, Larry Bird went out of his way when you were hot. He kept getting you the ball. They understood that. But one way or the other, you've got to make everybody better. And I see less and less of that in the superstars that we have here in the States. And I see more and more of that in the kids coming from Europe. They just understand how to make their teammates better, which is, I can't emphasize enough that if you have that skill, you can really help your team, and you'll be able to play on every team and play on in any system. Some of the so-called superstars on our team, if you put them with another really good player, all you would see is two guys butting heads. You wouldn't see them become great as a team. You'd see two dudes that just were like, you know, your turn, my turn, you're screwing me, and all that stuff. So it's
well, the good news there is you've never had to deal with that personally.
I'm sorry?
The good news there is that you never had to deal with that situation personally. So that's a huge relief.
I'm speaking totally from the outside, like a third party looking at something.
I love it. Hey, we had a topic yesterday, and it just dawned on me before I let you go. This is one that you might have some insight onto. We did a little poll yesterday, and you'd be really shocked at some of the answers we got. What's the worst Christmas present you ever got?
Oh, my. Well, you know, the worst Christmas present I ever got was like pajamas, just because, you know, man, I wanted something to play with. Like the best I got a BB gun when I was like, I lived in the woods. I got a BB gun when I was like 5 years old. That was like the coolest thing. I know, isn't that crazy? Went around, shot everything in the entire neighborhood for years. But, my Aunt Mary used to always give us pajamas, and then we had to act like we really liked them, you know? But I'm like, oh, pajamas, man. Give me a ball. Give me something to play with. I was one of those kids that, give me a puck. We had a hockey stick. Boy, if you got a puck and a hockey stick, you were out in the yard, out in the driveway immediately shooting at each other and stuff. And so I was one of those active guys. So I never was a clothes guy.
Well, and by the way, I'm sure those pajamas fit really well back then too, huh?
I had a lot of pajamas that came up to the middle of my shins, just so you know. And they look like knickers, but that's okay.
Hey, Payne Stewart had game because he had knickers. I just want to say to you, to the family, Lynn and the kids, wish them all Merry Christmas for me, Happy Holidays. We appreciate you always joining us here. I appreciate your friendship. Call a great game tonight. We'll talk to you on the flip side next week.
Guys, have a great Christmas. Always good talking to you. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas, Coach.
Kevin McHale, only get him here, ESPN 97.5. We got a half hour to go. You want to join the show, 713-780-ESPN, or hit us up on Twitter, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.